Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? You still don't understand what you're dealing with, do you? Perfect organism. Its structural perfection is matched only by its hostility. I admire its purity. A survivor, unencumbered by conscience, remorse, or delusions of morality. I can't lie to you about your chances, but you have my sympathies.
I forgot it was Bilbo that did that.
That's right. Yeah, that's inspired by our Alien RPG session. So we've got another one of those tonight.
Part two,
yes.
Out of who knows how many, maybe only two. I don't know.
We're getting there. Things are going to start to pick up. It was a little bit slow. There hasn't really been any combat or much interaction because we were just kind of setting things up and did a little bit of backstory. I think we talked a little bit about the setting than we would normally in other situations, because the setting for Alien is a little odd in that it's got an extended universe. There's comics and novels and things, but a lot of the things that happen in the movies don't connect very well, and it's hard to put together a timeline. So I think for this RPG, they definitely had a task ahead of them trying to...
Well, they also didn't set it during the movies.
Yes.
It's set like 3 to 5 years after Alien 3?
Yeah, and before Resurrection. But they seem to include things that are referenced only in comics or only... The War on Earth and the rise, like the second renaissance of synthetics and things. Mm. Yeah, so there's a lot there, interestingly enough, that wasn't really explained. And also a lot of the novelizations, which I don't know anybody that reads novelizations of movies, but...
Good point, yeah.
They put details in there. So maybe there's extra things in the screenplay or extra things they let the writers in on. So like Alan Dean Foster's Alien and Aliens, I think novelizations have little clues and little additional details to setting that you wouldn't know otherwise. I'm not crazy about that kind of stuff, but for role-playing, it's nice to... have more to dig into.
Too much, though, and I think you overwhelm people.
Yes, yeah, that's true. And I think the movies need to stand on their own, and I think for the most part they do.
Yeah, I think the movies stand on their own. I really don't like it when people go, well, in the novel or in the comic book, because it's like, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. If I didn't see it on the screen, it didn't happen.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, that was a big problem I've had with this new sequel trilogy for Star Wars. It's like, oh, but there's a novel that...
don't care.
It doesn't count. Yeah, it really does have to stand on its own. It's fun to have kind of collateral things to dig into if you really like that setting and you really want to be a fan of it. I guess that's fine, but yeah, I don't understand why you would leave holes in a screenplay.
Similarly, I don't understand why everything has to connect.
Yeah.
Some things can just be... standalone things that have no bearing on other things. Like, we don't have to know all the little bits about what happened to that stormtrooper that got shot in the head in episode 4. And right. The fan theories about, oh, that's Snoke, because look, the head wound matches up. I'm like, do not care. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
Getting back on track.
Well, I don't know. This might take us off track. So we've had a time of healing. The UK Games Expo is over. Yeah. We've had some time to recover from any of our differences. And then E3. So E3, of course, the CD Projekt Red exhibited Cyberpunk 2077.
Well, the role-playing game is what something red.
The new one, yeah. And I'm falling back to the same thing that I did, is I support the person being creative. And I support the person that did the work. And so there's a lot of criticism of Mike Pondsmith, and talking about his setting and depictions of certain groups, gangs, you know, in the setting. And I just want to read his quote that I really think sums it pretty much all up for me. So his quote is, "Who the fuck," I'm adding his expletive because I took it out. "Who the fuck do you think you are to tell me whether or not my creation was done right or not?" His creation is a 30-year-old tabletop RPG game. So it's going to be dated and it's not going to fit the current, you know, sensitivities in the current politics. And I think it's okay that it does that. And it's okay to even represent that in a current game. Like, you know, 2077 can be referencing situations and things from that previous setting. And we kind of have an understanding. I think Cyberpunk in general is very retro. Like, we already know it's a dated setting. It's very difficult to update because of how, I mean, there are ways that they've kind of done that in Shadowrun and even in probably the new Cyberpunk setting, but it is an old setting. Things are much more nuanced and much more complicated. It's not just the evil corpse and the runners, you know, so it's much less complicated. But I just want to, I'm suspicious of a lot of criticism trying to take works away from creators or kind of cancel creators or creative people, the assumption being if they're gone, you're going to fill their place. Like, you know, if you're criticizing them and you're working in the same business or you have the same job, you're in the same industry, different political points of view, and you say, yours is insensitive, yours is dated, yours is old, therefore step down, it's my time.
Okay.
And that doesn't happen. That's not how it works. That's not how business works. But I think there is kind of a, and when you see people criticizing pop culture, I could have written that better. I could have written the conclusion, the series finale of Game of Thrones better than that.
Then do it. Right. Well, that's my perspective is then do it.
Right. And that's a good way to look at it. If you're unhappy with how they're representing things, this game has history. This game has legacy. Make a better setting. You know, because a better setting will eclipse this old setting. People will see, I'm uncomfortable with this. I don't want to play this. And they will move on. And that's kind of how things need to evolve instead of kind of Band-Aid or
Sharpie.
Redacted. Yeah, redacted kind of, this doesn't work anymore. It's like, don't pick apart the setting, kind of leave it, let it do what it's going to do, and then make a better one.
Okay.
Yeah. That's just my wanting to defend creators in that way. You either, you know, leave it alone and say it's a product of its time because, I mean, this is a guy that grew up during the civil rights movement in the 60s in Detroit, I think is his hometown. So he's got a pretty good perspective. And I think he's got some sensitivities that people that are criticizing him don't have other than what they've read online. You know, they've got kind of an online perspective. So yeah, I just wanted to just say that, just defend the creator because I'm really tired of people that have, you know, dedicated a big part of their life to doing things. And then just now it's just being torn apart. You know?
We might float in different social media circles.
Yes.
I mean, I'm pretty sure we do. But and I'm saying that because, not that I went looking for it, but I, in this whole E3 and Cyberpunk 2077 kerfluffle stuff, whatever,
yes,
did not see any direct criticism of Mike Pondsmith.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen.
Right.
I'm saying in the circles and discussions I had, I did not see anyone say Mike Pondsmith needs to step down. He did this wrong. I saw criticism of how Project Red or CD Projekt Red was handling certain issues.
Right.
And I saw criticism of the old system looking at it through modern sensitivities, which I think is fair. Right. I think I absolutely agree with his statement here. He created this. It's no one's right to tell him he created it wrong.
Right.
So I absolutely agree with that. I think I'm going a couple of different directions here because, as I said, the only time I saw people bring up Mike Pondsmith's name in this discussion was to mention that he was African-American, and I feel as a way to deflect criticism from the material.
Right.
I saw people a few times almost invoking his name as a shield to say your criticisms of how, you know, the transgender issue or the gender identity issue is invalid because the creator is African-American.
Right.
And as you know, as a person of color, therefore he kind of, I'm not going to say he gets it, but I felt, and I'm going to say it again, people were using his name occasionally as a shield. But I think there's a whole nother discussion that I'm not qualified to have about how authors and creators of color have largely been either ignored, forgotten, or kind of pushed aside in the cyberpunk genre in favor of basically white authors and creators like Gibbs and whatever.
Right.
So I think it's very valid to bring up Cyberpunk 2020 as, hey, look, here's a cyberpunk franchise created by a person of color. A black guy created this. And I've also seen kind of discussions where cyberpunk almost immediately got co-opted by the corpse and you kind of ended up with the trench coat and katanas kind of, I don't know what else to call it. And I've seen other people argue back saying, yes, in mainstream kind of culture, look at what creators of color have done with it, because they are kind of, as marginalized people, they would know what these people on kind of like the fringes of society, and they're doing exciting things with cyberpunk. So don't say cyberpunk is canceled, whatever. Just look outside the narrow scope of Gibson and whoever at Philip K. Dick to see what's going on.
Right.
So yeah, I kind of don't know where I was going with it. I guess getting back to the whole thing, I think it's totally valid, as you said, to keep cyberpunk 2020 as sort of, I want to say relic, that's kind of a loaded word, but like a relic of its time. But I also think it's totally valid to say, given the way things are now, we hope you do better. We hope you kind of bring this in line to modern sensibilities and kind of leave that stuff out, the problematic stuff. I mean, because things change. And exactly as you said, or exactly as I said too, if you don't like it, make your own.
Yes.
And again, in kind of the circles I float in, I see a lot of people doing that. And I'm going to generalize here. And then I also see a couple times the mainstream getting mad and saying, well, this game isn't for us and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And it's like, you just said, go make your own. Right. That's exactly what we're doing. And now you're pissed that the story and whatever is centered on people that are not you.
Right.
So which one do you want? I mean, very often I see make your own, whatever, as a way to shut down a conversation or to just kind of like end the discussion, you know, that kind of went all over the place. But
no,
like, I agree with you on a lot of points. Mm-hmm. I don't know if, and I'm not going to play it because I actually read PDF of like old Cyberpunk 2020. Mm-hmm. Woof! Like, that's like, no, thank you. That's way too much math in that for me. And I don't, just not my type of game. I don't want to play that at all. But I would hope it kind of gets updated.
Mm-hmm. And it needs, I mean, there's weird things like the super reliance on cell phones and jacking in being more physical things that it definitely suffers from because its timeline is hysterically ridiculous on the way to 2020 because that's next year.
Maybe putting you on the spot here, but sure. When we played The Sprawl.
Yes.
We set it in Fantasy Flight Games' Android universe when I was running it. Everything there it's a fairly recent setting. So everything there was absolutely wireless and kind of futuristic from a modern standpoint, where, as you said, kind of traditionally cyberpunk or earlier cyberpunk works, obviously, is kind of retro, where you have to plug in and nothing is wireless. Did the Sprawl game feel cyberpunk to you? Because I kind of wonder if cyberpunk has to be retro future. And maybe this could be like a different topic later on for a future episode or something. But did both of those feel cyberpunk?
Well, I think it did because a lot of the feel of cyberpunk for me is just corporate run dystopia and people working like in an underworld or like a, you know, kind of a black market level against that. So they have, you know, political goals or things that they're opposing, or they're just, you know, basically trying to free the world from this kind of rule. And that it also has, I think, wireless or wired, it still works as long as there is some sort of, you know, matrix. There is some sort of, you know, you're logging in. So there's a parallel world. There's a world where you can manipulate and control things that's
cyber
separate.
Magic,
separate from the real world. So I think that's important for the setting. And and because we played the Netrunner card game for so long, I did always read that as cyberpunk. Mm. And so in the role playing, it felt like that very much. Yeah.
I think that's kind of funny since two of the three characters were pretty much corporate assets.
I know. It's funny.
Your character at least was kind of gray, like willing to operate against the company.
Right.
Where Jamie was like out and out corporate asset. And I like talking about that neon liberal as something they'll call cyberpunk that's actually not punk.
Right.
But and then I thought about it, I'm like, our game really wasn't that punk. We were kind of getting there.
Yes.
And I wanted to see what would happen when Jamie's character had to like put down a bioroid or like go against the, because that was their whole thing is like synthetics are kind of the revolution, and your character was obviously able to work against corporate interests as long as it kind of didn't get back to them.
Right.
And we were getting there, but I kind of think, funnily enough, our game wasn't really that cyberpunk.
We were punk. Yeah, that's true.
Punk. We were just like one third of the group was punk.
Yeah, that's really true. And that was a funny dynamic because I did see my character as he was just willing to work against any, he was working for the corporation just to feed the family, you know, just, and so he would do whatever it took. Ultimately though, I think cyberpunk, I don't know. When we did research for the episode about cyberpunk, I really got turned off
reading
the history of cyberpunk because the writers are just these bratty guys that are rebelling against Heinlein and the classic kind of 50s and 60s sci-fi.
Oh, the utopia sci-fi.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's all dystopia. It's all bad, man. And we're all cool and we're all punk. Mm. And, you know, it's like we're against everything and very nihilistic. And, and it's like, but it's very juvenile. And
it kind of is. Yeah.
And so you see that in the over-stylization, you know, where you're just like, how old are we? Should we be? I don't know. You know, that setting really turns me off because it's a rebellion to an optimistic and exploration-based, kind of extending humanity-based science fiction that I like, you know? Mm. So it's like,
I think that kind of gets back to my point about marginalized people writing it. Like I made a joke on Twitter where it's like, after seeing the CD Projekt Red, Cyberpunk 2077 protagonist, kind of your average scruffy white dude where you're just like, oh, what video game are you from? Because you're from all of them. And my joke was, okay, new cyberpunk protagonists can only be at least two of the three following things. White, straight, and male. If you're all three of those things, you're playing a neon liberal game. You get, like no more than two of those things.
Right.
But you kind of saying it being kind of juvenile and kind of, you know, pushing back and kind of that not really rebelling against stuff. I wonder if, again, that's the mainstream cyberpunk. Where you're looking at these white guys writing it when they haven't, getting into white privilege here, they probably haven't really experienced what it's like. And
yes,
then you go to like authors of color and you're like, okay, you have some idea of what it's like. And so maybe you could write a better cyberpunk or at least a more punk cyberpunk.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it was just, you know, reaction to Reagan era 80s and just like, the world's been turned over to the corporations, man. Reagan's just opening it up and there's nothing but advertising on TV for kids and, you know, we're being poisoned. And it's really funny. I mean, just talking about, you know, cyberpunk being kind of a relic, like the original treatment. When people talk about the effects of television, when you see the, you know, the special report and television is bending your mind and it's changing society, it's like, really? You have no idea what's coming up next.
Yeah, really. Bending your mind. People are growing bone spurs from all the technology. Right. Yeah. Which, that's not from technology.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to last week, we talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
The study ended with a hypothesis that said it was due to modern technology. But it's something that develops naturally anyway, just from trying to have to keep your head up.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing was the large percentage of younger people who had it, where normally you start seeing it develop later with older people. So it's fair bet, I think, to say it's probably from us looking down at our cell phones. Mm-hmm. But the study did not directly say that.
Right. And it's a juicy headline to say young people are growing horns.
Yeah, exactly. Cell phones cause horns. Yeah.
They must be satanic. All right. Yeah, so that was my week. So anything for you? Basically, I've just focused on running Aliens.
Oh, yeah. I've been learning more Affinity stuff.
Oh, nice.
Also trying not to spend money, which is why I don't have any Kickstarter updates. Because after buying those three Affinity programs and all the other Kickstarters, I'm like, I got to cut back. Yeah, still only worked for about like 2-3 hours. But I laid out the June Fantastic Fate Patreon resource pack entirely in Affinity Publisher. It's, if you know InDesign...
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty easy changeover.
Okay.
Some stuff is not in the same place and kind of got to hunt for it now, but I can, with only looking up a few things, I was able to do pretty much everything I did in InDesign, and it seems to run a lot faster, at least on my machine, and exporting PDF also was a lot faster.
Nice.
So I'm pretty happy with that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, those Adobe products are pretty bloated, and there's like 3D in Photoshop. It's like, really?
My machine's also... pretty old and slow. So yeah, but I mean, like copying over a page, it might as well be like, okay, let's copy that and duplicate the page, go check on my kid, get a drink, let's okay, go to the bathroom, come back, oh, it's still thinking, all right, great. Or now it's like copy paste, oh, it worked, cool. Yeah
Great. So so as far as feature topics, one thing that I was thinking of that Lyle brought up in the last session is props in RPG. And I was curious about your opinion. I mean, no one is here from the group, so we're free to talk as we will.
I'm sure they'll listen later.
But do you think that's a good thing and an immersive thing, or do you think that it could be distracting?
Huh. That's tough to say, because I generally don't do props only because I'm a perfectionist and I want things to be perfect, and they can't be, so I don't use them. I remember a game that Chris ran, D&D 4E, where we were given a prop that was a clear plastic rod.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciated the craft that Chris did that went into it. We couldn't figure out what to do. And that's not a knock on him or anything. And it was like, oh, you're supposed to use it as a magnifying glass. You roll it across this tiny print little letter and it actually magnifies stuff.
Right.
And it was fun. And I understand that some people like to have that tactile thing to play with at the table.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I don't think it does anything really with immersion, because I'm playing my character, not me. I'm now LARPing, which isn't a bad thing, but it's kind of leads down the rabbit hole of do the skills I, the player, possess matter, or do the skills of my character sheet matter?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, that's a good point, because it is kind of removing you. Lyle looked like he was enjoying it, because he could go into character with that gesture of picking up the cup. And
That is an excellent point. And I did notice that. So I absolutely agree that, having a prop, or we had talked before on one of the old episodes about like a theme song listening as you came over, something to pick up, or a prop word that actually helps you get into your character.
Mm. Yeah. So I think that would be a good discussion. It would be fun to talk about how it could be used, and how kind of the pitfalls, what's distracting, or what you should be careful.
I think I'd be much more in favor of it as a device to get into character.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was pretty funny. He was still waving that cup around despite the fact our characters were out in space in spacesuits. I'm like, how are you going to drink from that thing? All right.
It's just the coffee evaporating, turning into vapor into the... Yes, and probably frozen.
Tink, tink, tink against the front of your hood or your helmet.
Right, that was the fun thing that we had people taking drugs, people drinking, wearing space.
To be fair, John's character took drugs inside the spaceship, so there was atmosphere.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's right. I have a Kickstarter for this week.
You're going to make me spend more money.
I don't know. It's interesting. I'm not sure how tempting it is. And there's a few other platforms that do this now. But a company called Bouncy Rock, a Norwegian developer, is doing a virtual 3D kind of tile set for role playing. And it can be themed any way. They said, you know, it's not system dependent. But what they showed, of course, was fantasy. So very, you know, 5e looking dwarves and goblins and trolls and a dungeon tile set. But it's basically a place where you can meet and interact with this in this 3D world, and you have painted miniatures, and it the way things move is just like you would interact with a Dwarven Forge set on your actual table.
Okay, so it's not animated.
Right. There may be some lighting effects, and they do things that they call sound pillars. So when you move into certain areas, maybe certain atmospheric sounds or things can be triggered. So maybe like in video games, when you're moving through the 3D space, they do invisible triggers that suddenly you'll hear something rustling or you'll hear a growl of an animal.
Right.
And they also allow you to put music. They're doing like original music for inside this system.
So is this kind of designed to be used on things like Roll20 or other virtual tabletop kind of things?
On its own, yeah. I think it's not supposed to be incorporated. It's actually its own platform.
Okay.
And they've been testing it. It's been in alpha for a while with a group of people testing. And the interesting thing that they say, and I'm not sure if this is scale or actual physical, is that each board, each world that you can build with this system can be up to 30 kilometers across and 10 kilometers tall.
When you sent over the notes, I thought that was a typo.
Yeah, no, it's so it, and unless it's a scale, unless it's world scale. So you're, you know,
I would hope
Yeah, you're going down to a 28 millimeter, 30 millimeter miniature. That's still huge. I mean, you can build an entire country and you know, different kingdoms
small country. If it's only 30 kilometers.
Oh, yeah. But that's pretty, impressive. You can actually, you know, feel like you're getting places. Yeah, physically moving through something. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting approach, something to keep a look at, because I've been looking at like 3D printing and tile, 3D printing tiles and things that, you know, create kind of immersive boards for role playing. And this does it virtually. Right. So I'm curious like how successful that is and how comfortable it is, because always things that you can do online that instantly eliminates the distances, you know, so people that can't get together in the same physical room, you know, can still have that kind of experience. The project is called Tailspire. So I named the company, not the project. So Tailspire. And so it's a digital tile set and miniatures with music and sound effects.
Cool. I'm going to have to go check it out because I'm having a little bit of trouble of concepting what it looks
like. It looks like retro painted figures and things. Yeah, it just looks like a video game version of a tile set, because you're kind of the camera is down in there and the GM has control of the camera so they can focus everybody on something. Okay. So the troll, you know, walks through the entrance to the tomb and he's right there. You zoom right in on it. So yeah, he can direct your view, which is interesting, but I don't know. I mean, if it feels very computery and very artificial, then that might be just as distracting as anything else.
But I mean, with the rise of like Roll20 and other kinds of virtual tabletop stuff, as you said, people who are not in the same physical location being able to game, I see this being really useful. And people love Dwarven Forge and their miniatures.
Yes. Yeah. So that's, and this would be much less expensive than that. So yeah, actually it was nice there to actually have the entire system without like customized things and different settings and things unlocked, but their basic system is only $20.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. So very low level entry buy in. So that's what made it interesting to me, because a lot of people, when they do these big scale or these like new technology things, they have big price tags.
Right.
I'm always kind of reluctant to talk about digital things in Kickstarters, because so many digital products, I haven't been burnt by anything, but things that I follow, sometimes digital projects are just more easily just drift into vaporware. And, yeah, never materialize and just say, yeah, we spent the money, it's not going to happen.
Or if you're going to want to get real dystopian, hey, DRM, and then stuff just stops working 20 years from now.
Yeah, right. All right. And the last thing I had was a question that came up.
Yeah, we're getting
questions. Yay. We got another question. So it was something that came up on our YouTube channel when we posted.
And you didn't just ignore it.
No, I didn't. Why didn't I? But the our actual play for the first session of Alien. And the person said, why did you read the character agendas when that would give the players so much more opportunity for role play? And I was like, agendas, what are you talking about? So I immediately jumped on that because it was.
We did read one.
Well, it wasn't. That was all background.
Oh, okay, it was.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so that was the only problem is the corporate agent, his background reads like an agenda. It reads like, this just happened to you. You have the opportunity to do this. You want to do this. So, and I think because, you know, they're directing him as kind of a scumbag character. Right. And everybody knows they're, you know, kind of grudgingly working with him. Nobody is his friend.
Yep, doesn't have a buddy.
Right. That was the only one. And Lyle reacted pretty badly to this. Why are you telling everybody everything?
Yeah. Because as you, and I didn't realize until just now, as you said, that did read like an agenda. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought, oh, we just did a sample agenda when I was sitting at the table. And now I know that this wasn't, but maybe it's not poorly worded, but it does seem like an agenda. And when those are things you're supposed to keep secret, I can totally understand that reaction. Yeah.
His agendas are far more worse than
whatever. Really? Okay.
So immediately I jumped on that because I did not read agendas. And that was definitely the fault, I think, of the PDF author, the adventure author, is how much information it sounded like you were being given in the corporate agent's agenda. Everybody else was kind of mild background. Mm. And you've got a sick brother. You've got financial problems.
You're drawing back,
My fear with this, when we were getting into it, and we did kind of really slowly start because we talked a lot about setting and then we talked about rules. And I was worried if I gave everybody those backgrounds a lot of people hadn't read the PDF. And if I gave everybody backgrounds, we would have spent the whole first session in the galley just kind of going, kind of getting everybody up to speed of who you are. And the idea of the setting was you've been working together for 6 months.
Yep.
So it's like they know this. Role-playing, I mean, it would have created different dynamics and interesting reveals of things and interesting holding back of things that would have created, interesting surprises and more dynamic. But for the sake of time, and we're always like kind of in that 2 hour, time limit. So I'm just like, I'm just going to roll through this because we're playing pre-gens and this is what everybody knows.
Yep.
But basically the information about the corp, I think everybody would have been suspecting in 6 months. It's like, he's in this for the money and he's going to cut us off or give us a bonus or based on what he's watching. I see that as it's a valid point. And I think that, especially in that setting, that it would be fun to have people meeting not after working 6 months and going into cryosleep, but actually when they were assembled, when they were called together, and let them kind of reveal those backgrounds as much as they wanted to or not. Right. And also then be able to kind of create a little bit more of their own, because that was the one thing with all the player handouts and things, when people are choosing the characters, like, how happy are you with this? Do you want to change the gender? Do you want to change the motivation? Is this something you'd be happy to role play? And I was surprised everybody seemed to settle into their characters pretty well and kind of figure out that this is what I want to do with it. And that's, I think, not always easy when things are presented to you. Here's a package and this is what their motivations are.
Well, I think we're all pretty good role players where we just said, okay, this is a one shot. We're going to be playing pre-gens. Mm-hmm. We're going to get something and we'll just make do with whatever we get.
Right.
But that being said, we are being handed a character, and I'm not going to say I'm playing my character poorly. Like, I still don't know kind of what she is, because I mean, I've only looked at her for like 2 hours. So as opposed to creating a character where you get to think a lot more about it.
Mm-hmm.
So for a campaign game, sure. Starting everybody off before you hit cryosleep to have people share as much or as little background as they want. For a one shot, I am totally fine with you have been working together for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everything, but you know a fair amount of stuff about each other.
Right.
And even if it doesn't have to be in character, I mean, I think that opens up important discussions of, oh, what do I know about you? Or I think it's fine for the player to say, oh, yeah, you know that about me.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the players don't, it's like you, the character, know this about me because we've been working together for 6 months. So even though it's new information for you, role play as if you have known it the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad that went okay. But I definitely see the person's points. And so, Axel, I definitely, agree that preferably, have we had the time, it would have been nicer to get into that session. He even commented he ran this exact session and he did it that way. He did it as a player handout and then let the players determine in that first meeting after you wake up what you want to talk
share,
about.
Right.
And I think it's also a little bit of fault of the PDF being such an unfriendly printable unprintable thing.
It's beautiful, but you do not want to print that thing at all.
Yeah, so unless you're gonna have everybody on tablets and say, okay, so only read this page and then skip down to this page, that's an interesting discussion. And I think eliminating opportunities for role play is something that a game master shouldn't be doing.
Oh yeah.
But sometimes for sake of getting a session,
a one shot,
getting up and running as fast as possible, I think a
one, which shot is why for one shots and con games I'm a big fan of the in media res or the cold start, where it's like stuff is happening
right
now
to,
and because it gives people a chance to explore the system, kind of gives people a chance to do something. Like, we kind of got past it fairly quickly, but I was a little bit stumped about, okay, my character would know what to do or general routine when you wake up from cryosleep. Yes. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're just going to hang out in the med bay.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, hey, we're getting a transmission from mother. Oh, thank goodness, something to do.
Yes, yes.
So yeah, I'm a big fan of just like something is happening right now that you kind of need to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start the action. And then we can kind of figure out you know, why that happened, or there's like a downtime scene.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate you. So like, why did I use that? There's, because nothing's downtime. Everything's interesting. Otherwise, you just cut it out and don't do it.
Right.
So yeah, now there's a less tense scene where we kind of get to role play and find out what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where can people find you?
On Twitter, because that's where I live, as usual. It's HiveMind, HyveMynd. My Patreon is Fantastic Fate Resources, and also at the fantasticfateresources.com. That's the blog site.
Nice. All right. And of course, Idle Red Hands is at idleredhands.com. So that's access to the YouTube channel, podcast, and basically the downloads and resources, everything we've been posting. So there is a print friendly version of a player reference and a character sheet for the Alien cinematic starter. If you want to try that and you don't want to
break your print.
Yes, it's a ridiculously unprintable file, but very beautifully designed. And the artwork is gorgeous. Yeah, I really like the artist that they chose.
Yeah, it's great.
So follow us on Twitter at Utter Red Hands, and of course the Patreon. So if you want to get involved in the podcast, support it, improve it, and actually give some input on what we do and what we play and what we talk about, patreon.com/utterredhands.
It's much more likely to look at comments there than from YouTube.
Right. Yes, I fell for it. I fell for the replying to a comment. But it was a good guy. I mean, it was definitely somebody that was asking an honest question. Right. It wasn't like, what's wrong with you guys? Yeah. So I think it was a very honest, like, why would you do that? So wonderful. Yeah, cool. All right. So that's it for this week. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.